Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Foundations Support Nonprofits with Millions. Midland's philanthropic leaders provide $2.527 million to 25 organizations during coronavirus crisis, by Stuart Doreen. Midland's foundations are the backbone of the community philanthropic spirit. In the past, the foundations have provided tens of millions, if not more, to education, health, quality of life, and other community initiatives, not to seek glory for themselves, but to create a better Midland. Coronavirus is bringing out the same spirit and, as importantly, needing dollars to a community needing a helping hand. Specifically, a block of foundations has provided 25 different organizations with a total of $2.527 million in the last 5 weeks. The stories coming to us from nonprofits here in Midland are inspirational, said Mark Palmer, executive director of the Abel Hanger Foundation. Our nonprofit community is collaborative, but now we are hearing stories of how they are working together to find new ways to meet the needs of the people they serve. Stories like PBS providing State of Texas curriculum on air to help parents with homeschooling, and the Boys and Girls Club of Midland working with the West Texas Food Bank to provide food for families in need. These are two of the amazing stories I have heard of organizations adapting to be able to continue their work while still diligently safeguarding the health of their colleagues. A nonprofit exists to serve a charitable need. In the current climate, with their hands tied by COVID, they are still finding ways to fulfill their mission or even reshape it a bit to help us, he said. Our nonprofits are doing what they always do, providing a safety net for Midlanders who have found themselves challenged by this unprecedented set of circumstances. Palmer said there are officials with 12 or 13 foundations, which prefer to remain anonymous, that meet weekly for about 90 minutes. During these meetings, nonprofits have the opportunity to provide an update of their needs and how each is responding to the coronavirus pandemic. Palmer said presentations include what they have needed to do to modify their respective missions and how they make sure they remain relevant. We have learned a lot through these conversations, Palmer said. Working together, the foundations are able to more easily manage a database of coronavirus giving. Palmer said the average grant provided is around $80,000. People are trying to get resources to nonprofits and provide that resource as needed for folks who are impacting the community right now, said Palmer, listing specifically the West Texas Food Bank, Senior Life Midland, and Helping Hand of Midland, which coincidentally were three of the four nonprofits featured on the front of Sunday's Reporter Telegram. Palmer, a veteran of nonprofit community in Midland, said he can't yet compare the triple whammy that has hit Midland's nonprofit community, but that he's heard plenty of stories of the impact caused by a national shutdown, coronavirus, and the downturn in the price of oil. He said there are wonderful stories about the things that nonprofits are doing and the way they are taking care of business. It is amazing, he said. This article is entitled Commissioners Delay Vote on Pro-Rationing, by Mella McEwen. Texas's three railroad commissioners on Tuesday discussed whether to require Texas operators to cut 20% or 1 million barrels of oil production, but declined to vote on the matter. Despite Commissioner Ryan Sitton's call to vote on enacting cuts beginning June 1st, Commission Chairman Wayne Christian and Commissioner Christy Craddock declined to take action, seeking more information instead. The commissioners are expected to vote on the question at their May 5th hearing. Sitton pushed for the commission to begin the process, saying events impacting the energy markets are happening too quickly. Let's be clear, taking weeks or even days right now to act is in itself a choice, he told his fellow commissioners. We are seeing a level of oil industry demand destruction and an oil industry downturn that has in the past happened over the course of a year, happening now over the course of days. Domestic oil production declines that have taken 30 years from 1973 to 2006 is now taking 2 months, Sitton said. He called for action that would prorate Texas oil production by 25%, but he said that would have to be tied to action by other states and producing nations. A cut of 1 million barrels of Texas production would have to be matched by 4 million barrels elsewhere in the U.S. by Canada and OPEC nations, he said. It should also be tied to market demand and lifted when market demand returns to 85% of normal levels. That would set an extremely high threshold for commission involvement in the future, he said. The cut should be applied only to operators producing more than 1,000 barrels per day and done by operator, not lease, and based on maximum production in the fourth quarter of 2019. Finally, he said, it should be evaluated on a monthly basis. Christian and Craddock were both concerned about the legalities of pro-rationing, saying any action they took to order the cuts or not order the cuts would result in litigation. Anything we do is likely to end up in court, Craddock said. Being an attorney, a kind of look at the world in that direction. Litigation won't help anyone if we don't do this right. After last week's 10-hour-plus long hearing, she said there were questions she felt she needed answers to, such as, does case law support pro-rationing and the process? Is it legal unless it's done field by field? Are evidentiary hearings required before a pro-rationing order, or is one necessary to defend the order? And are marginal wells left out of the order? And what other types of wells and other types of producers should be included? Christian stressed that the commission's delay in a vote should not be seen as hesitation to take action. He said the commission is intent on taking any action that would help the industry. He noted that such litigation could result in even longer delays, and he has asked Attorney General Ken Paxton to weigh in on the legalities. I want to make darn sure when we make a motion, it fits the legal requirements and won't get stuck in court and sits there for months. And it's totally too late for us to take action, he said. He has heard from U.S. Senators Ted Cruz and John Cornyn and has scheduled calls to discuss the oil markets, inviting North Dakota's state mineral resources director to join in. Oklahoma, he said, is also cooperating with Texas as they consider implementing production cuts. I've also reached out to Canada's oil minister, who has offered to help us if we decide to prorate, Christian said. Now is not the time to be timid, but more information is needed before action is taken, Christian said. Sitton warned the state's energy industry could shed hundreds of thousands of jobs, and while eventually those jobs will return, he said they may never come back to Texas or the United States. We don't work for the energy industry. We work for 28 million Texans, and it's in their interest for our energy economy, our energy industry, to be strong. This article is entitled, MISD Cancels Traditional Graduation. Districts Opt for Virtual Ceremonies, by Stuart Doreen. There won't be traditional graduation ceremonies for Midland ISD Class of 2020, according to the school district. Chief of Staff Katie Atkins said Tuesday during the Unified Command Team press conference that the school district will opt for a virtual ceremony to honor graduates. Graduation ceremonies for Midland High and Lee High School were set for May 23rd at the Chaparral Center on the Midland College campus. Atkins said details of the virtual graduation have not been determined. Based on everything we know at this point in time, graduation will not be moving forward in its traditional manner, Atkins said. It was a difficult decision for us to make. We did not come to it lightly. The district has determined that it cannot in good conscience put families, students, and staff members at risk for coronavirus, which has led to the death of 4 residents in Midland County, according to the Midland Health Department. Midland College already had canceled its ceremonies, also scheduled for May. Atkins said a number of opinions were considered, including an outdoor or open-air graduation ceremony. She said the first and foremost priority is the health of students, families, and the community. More information will be coming from respective campuses, Atkins said. This article is entitled Midland Medical Lodge Hotspot for Virus by Stuart Doreen. Ground zero in the coronavirus pandemic in Midland was the home to 15 new cases Monday. The City of Midland identified the Midland Medical Lodge in North Midland as the location, and members of the Unified Command Team on Tuesday called it a hotspot that until these past few days Midland County had been fortunate to avoid. Health Department officials put the count of the confirmed cases inside Midland County with connections to the skilled nursing facility at nearly half of the 64 total confirmed cases inside the county as of Tuesday morning. The 28 associated with the lodge include 8 staff members and 20 residents. The 17 confirmed cases reported Monday night were in addition to the 4 reported earlier in the day. The 21 cases were the most in one day of any in Permian Basin City and shot Midland up the county rankings from the state of Texas. Midland went from being 47th to being tied for 38th, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. Midland is now ahead of Ector with 60 cases, Tom Green with 41 cases, while trailing Lubbock 445. Potter 160, Taylor 144, Randall 115, according to numbers Tuesday on DSHS's website. The city on Tuesday reported another confirmed case of COVID-19, and again there is a connection to the lodge. The patient is a male in his 80s. That brings the updated total to 65 total confirmed cases in Midland County and 29 confirmed cases at Midland Medical Lodge. The city also reported Tuesday that another person died as a result of coronavirus complications. The person also was associated with the lodge. Of the 4 confirmed cases who have died, 3 have connections to Midland Medical Lodge. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said the lodge continues to be an area of concern, but that it appears to be the lone senior nursing facility that is a hotspot at this time. He said the confirmed cases came as a result of the testing of about 100 people at the lodge. "I can't say that was surprising at all that there were a number of positives," Myers said. "We don't know what to expect. That's why we test." Elective surgeries. The conversation about elective surgeries continues, although Myers said new developments with the coronavirus spiking locally does factor into the hospital's decision-making. Myers said Tuesday that beginning today, the hospital will start slowly into elective endoscopy and colonoscopy procedures. "Our 3 local GI physicians are working with their patients to begin returning to those normal schedules as soon as today, and we expect them to ramp up over several days. We are also releasing the restrictions on a majority of our imaging procedures, including screening procedures, and for the most part, imaging will be open for business today as well." Easy Rider drivers. Myers also said during his morning press conference that another area of concern was that a number of Easy Rider bus drivers tested positive. He said another 26 people at the Midland-Odessa Urban Transit District, which operates public transportation in Midland and Odessa, have been tested. "We expect to get those results in the next day or two and determine if there is further guidance we need to offer," Myers said. This article is entitled Midland Police Department, Male Faces Charges of Interference with Duties of a Peace Officer, by Mary Dearin. A charge of interference with the duties of a police officer is pending against an individual who was involved in an incident Sunday, according to the city's spokeswoman. She told the Reporter Telegram in an email that the charges pending because due to COVID-19 protocols, he could not be taken to jail. Midland Police Department officers were dispatched Sunday to the area of Florida Avenue between Big Spring Street and La Mesa Avenue in reference to complaints of criminal trespass and street racing. While initiating procedures towards ceasing the unlawful and dangerous behavior, one of the officers was summoned by a passenger of a passing vehicle, according to a statement from MPD. The individual appeared to need assistance, and as the vehicle entered a nearby parking lot and stopped, the police officer approached to investigate. It appeared that the individual was attempting to thwart law enforcement efforts, and the officer directed the individual to get out of the vehicle. After initially refusing the officer's directive, the passenger was detained for interference with the duties of a peace officer. As the officer continued to address the suspect, the driver and two other passengers got out of the vehicle and began to encroach on the officer's position, according to the statement. Two officers were across the roadway, engaged in a separate traffic contact, and observed the subjects approaching the officer. They immediately made their way to the locations. With weapons drawn, the officers positioned themselves between the lone officer and the encroaching subjects while directing them to the ground. Two of the three suspects refused to comply. One crouched while remaining balanced on his feet, and the other reached behind him as if to retrieve a weapon, according to the statement. In response, the two officers engaged the individuals with approved front push kicks, effectively forcing both to the ground to be handcuffed. Because of COVID-19 protocols, the subjects were released. An internal report related to the application of force is in progress, according to the statement. This article is entitled "Signs Urge Drivers to Slow Down" by J.C. Lewis. The intersection at Midkiff and Golf Course Roads has been closed because an old wastewater manhole in the middle of the intersection collapsed, Public Information Officer Aaron Bailey said in an email. This construction has diverted traffic around the intersection and into some neighborhoods. One neighborhood that has been impacted is the 3200 block of Boyd Avenue. A black SUV traveling at a high rate of speed hit a parked and unoccupied black truck earlier this week. The SUV hit the truck and rolled. The female driver was taken to the ER with minor injuries and charged with driving while intoxicated, open container, and assault on a public servant, according to Bailey. Andrew Cobb lives on the corner of Cessna Drive and Boyd Avenue. He said that the wreck brought people out of their homes and got neighbors to start talking about safety. He has in his front yard a spray-painted sign that reads, "Slow down." "We decided that evening when she hit to put that sign up," he said. "He put a sign on his truck because it moved approximately 8 to 10 feet when she hit it." Cobb said several other neighbors have displayed signs that read, "Drive like your kids live here," along the street. "There is speeding on this street, and on this street trying to get around with the construction has exponentially increased our traffic," he said. "We tried to put that sign right there as people make that turn to at least remind them to slow down." Cobb, who has lived in the neighborhood for about 11 years, said he's not sure if the sign has much effect, but people slow down when they see him and his wife outside at night. "When we come out and sit in the evening, it seems to have an effect," he said. "Several people down the way are outside also in the evening." The city of Midland has placed two radar feedback trailers, one on Boyd Avenue and one on Cessna Drive. Bailey said the police have additional patrols in the area and are taking enforcement action when appropriate. Drivers have been advised that through traffic must avoid neighborhood streets and should use Garfield Street or Midland Drive for north and south movement, and Neely Avenue or Andrews Highway for east and west movement. Cobb said they are still getting a lot of heavy truck traffic for a residential area. "I mean, they have to do it because it's all part of that construction," he said. "It's not forever. It's just temporary, but we are trying to get people to slow down." The intersection construction is not related to the road bond, Bailey said. the initial repair of the wastewater manhole has created a trickle-down effect for other needed repairs. An adjacent water line needed to be replaced because of conflicts with sewer line repairs. In addition, staff evaluated the condition of the adjacent storm drain facilities and determined that the existing storm drain pipe is at risk of collapsing. It is being replaced at this time. The traffic signal will need to be partially rebuilt, and the intersection will be completely repaved because of the work conducted underground, she said. If there are no significant weather delays, the project should be completed in 8 weeks. This article is entitled, Ector County Confirms One Coronavirus Case, ORMC to Resume Elective Surgeries, by J.C. Lewis. Medical Center Hospital will not be resuming elective surgeries at this time, CEO Russell Tippin said Tuesday, while Odessa Regional Medical Center will be opening for elective cases starting today, which is in line with Governor Greg Abbott's executive order, Dr. Rohit Saravanan said. Tippin said MCH has tested 572 people with 37 positive results, 447 negative results, and 88 pending tests. Positive cases haven't increased over the past 24 hours at MCH. The hospital is treating 4 positive patients currently, with 3 of them on the isolation floor and 1 in the critical care unit. MCH has 9 persons under investigation, with 7 of those on the isolation floor and 2 in critical care. MCH Chief of Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said they have 14 pending results for Madison Medical Resorts and 155 tests that have come back negative with no positive cases. Odessa Regional Medical Center President and CEO Stacy Brown said ORMC has conducted 149 tests with 13 positive results. One more positive case was confirmed. ORMC has tested 134 negative cases and has 2 pending cases. There are no patients being treated for coronavirus at ORMC. The hospital conducted 4 rapid tests yesterday. Brown said ORMC tested 98 people at Madison Medical Resort with 59 negative results, no positive results, and 39 tests are still pending. The Ector County Health Department has reported 1 more positive coronavirus case in Ector County, making the total 61 cases, according to the ECHD website. Ector County Precinct 1 Commissioner Eddie Shelton said ECHD has received 937 negative results, has 180 pending lab test results, and 1,178 total tests. Ector County by the numbers. Confirmed cases 61. Days since first case was confirmed, 25. By gender, male 22, female 39. By race, Hispanic 74%, non-Hispanic 26%. Source of exposure, travel-related 4, person-to-person 36, unknown 21. This article is entitled, U.S. Geological Survey Records Quake Near Midland County Ector Line, from Staff Reports. The U.S. Geological Survey recorded an earthquake Tuesday early in the morning near the Midland-Ector County line. A 3.1 magnitude quake took place at 1:29 a.m., about 6.83 miles northeast of Odessa. The USGS said the depth was 3.1 miles. Tuesday's tremor near the intersection of State Highway 191 and Faudry Road was the 6th recorded in the last 7 days, according to the USGS. The most recent was recorded Saturday near Gardendale, which was less than 20 miles west of Midland and north of Odessa. The 1.7 magnitude quake took place at 9:03 p.m. with a depth of 3.1 miles. A quake with a magnitude of 2.5 to 5.4 is often felt but only causes minor damage, according to UPSIAS, an educational site for seismologists. There are about 30,000 quakes each year, according to the site. This is a section of the paper called Opinion. This column is called Guest View. It's entitled Coronavirus is Now the Leading Cause of Death in the U.S. from the Dallas Morning News. We can now officially put to rest all comparisons of COVID-19 to influenza. The numbers are in. Coronavirus is killing more Americans than the flu and almost everything else. COVID-19 is now the second leading cause of death in America, according to data compiled by the Washington Post. In some parts of the country, it's way ahead. In Louisiana and Washington, D.C., more people died of COVID-19 during the first week of April than any other cause. In New York, it's not even close. 5,226 people died in that state from the virus that week, compared to 870 who died of heart disease. The upward march of these numbers is steady and disturbing. The week of March 16th, COVID-19 didn't rank among the 15 most common causes of death. The next week, it ranked 7th. The following week, it moved up to 3rd. The week of April 6th, COVID-19 killed more people than anything besides heart disease, and it's likely to take the top spot soon. Possibly it already has, since news emerged last week of variations in the way different reports, way different states report coronavirus cases. These statistics are based on seasonally adjusted averages for other causes of death. On an average week in April, 12,626 people die of heart disease in America. The first week of April, 12,392 people died of COVID-19. These measures are a tragic milestone, and they're also a verdict on attempts to downplay the severity of this event. Messaging from political leaders and some media voices early in the outbreak comparing it to the flu were wrong. They may have been well-intentioned efforts to keep people from panicking, though it's just as likely they were callow attempts to deny the future scientists were projecting. But that point is moot now. We can put it to bed. Coronavirus is the most formidable public health threat in a generation. The time for minimizing is over. The time for aggressive testing, social distancing, and hopefully soon, treatment is now. This is the obituary column from Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. Andrew Jeffrey Hogan. Andrew Jeffrey Hogan, 23, left this world April 14, 2020 in Midland, Texas. Andrew was survived by his mom, Janice Hogan, brother Nathan Hogan, Nathan's wife Casey Hogan, and Nathan's children Grayson and Emery Hogan, all of Midland, Texas. Andrew will be reuniting with his dad, Daniel Patrick Hogan, and many other loved ones who have been waiting in heaven. Due to COVID-19, the family is unable to hold any services at this time. Andrew's family asked friends and family to do at least one random act of kindness in Andrew's memory. Condolences can be sent to www.ellisfunerals.com. Becky Schroyer, 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Becky, a devout Christian and faithful servant of Christ our Savior, finished her good fight and course on Sunday afternoon, April 19th. Born Eunice Rebecca Lomax, Becky, on December 2, 1947, to Joe and Mildred Lomax of Van Horn, Texas, the youngest of three. While at Texas Tech, she met her future husband, Larry Dwight Schroyer of Sonora, Texas. Becky is survived by her husband of 47 years, Larry D. Schroyer, daughter Stacy McWilliams and her husband Kevin McWilliams, daughter Lisa Schroyer, grandchildren Colin McWilliams and Kaylee McWilliams, sister Jomalee Chapel of Seminole, brother Charlie Lomax and wife Ruetta Lomax of Van Horn, and numerous nieces and nephews. Graveside services will be held at Cedar Hill Cemetery near the family's ranch. A celebration of life will be held at a future date. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be donated to First Baptist Church of Midland, St. Jude Hospital, or West Texas Rehabilitation Center. Betty Ann Betty Boop Palomino. Betty Ann Betty Boop Palomino, 67, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, April 18, 2020. Betty Ann was born on February 15, 1953, in Marfa, Texas. Betty Ann was preceded in death by her mother, Irene J. Palomino, brother, Danny J. Palomino. She is survived by three sisters, Bilia Quinones of Odessa, Yolanda Palomino of Midland, and Thelma Ochoa and husband Arnold of Midland, three brothers, Manuel Palomino and wife Estella of Midland, Frank Palomino and wife Patricia of Corpus Christi, and Juan Palomino of Midland, and numerous nieces and nephews. There will be private viewings and memorial service will be set for a later date in Fort Davis, Texas, where she will be put to rest with her mom and dad. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Cecil Lewis Smith. Cecil Lewis Smith peacefully went to be with the Lord on the morning of April 19, 2020, in his home with his family at his side. He was born on September 29, 1928, to the late Cecil Burleson Smith and Esther Ray Smith in Blackwell, Texas. On April 12, 1946, he married the love of his life, Verla Mae Jackson. He leaves to cherish his memories his wife of 74 years, Verla, daughter Brenda J. Holmes and husband Robert, grandchildren R.R. Holmes, Jason L. Swafford and wife Lisa K., Randy S. Swafford, Matthew R. Holmes and wife Gretchen, Andrew L. Swafford and wife Lisa Marie, Jennifer T. Holmes, several great-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his brother, Dixie R. Smith, and his daughter, Karen S. Swafford. Graveside services will be held at the Blackwell Cemetery at 2 p.m. on Tuesday, April 21, 2020, with Reverend Mark Hewitt officiating. Interment will follow under the direction of McCoy Funeral Home. The family extends heartfelt gratitude to the entire Blackwell community for the love and support shown to our family and to the caregivers of kindred at home, which allowed Cecil to remain at home. Online condolences may be made at www.mccoyfh.com. Floyd Bailey Abernathy. Floyd Bailey Abernathy of Midland rejoined his wife of 66 years, Helen Flora Payne, on April 20, 2020, after a short illness. Floyd was 94. Floyd was born on June 2, 1925, in Eastland, Texas. He married Helen on January 24, 1947. Floyd is survived by sons Marshall of Midland and Michael and wife Carol of Sweetwater, granddaughters Dawn Abernathy of San Jose, California, and Megan Rowan and her husband Ethan of Mineola, and grandson Justin Abernathy and Amy of Midland. He is survived by great-granddaughters Reagan and Kennedy of San Jose, Aurora of Midland, and great-grandsons Lawson, William, and Rowdy of Mineola. Visitation will be held on Wednesday, April 22, 2020, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. A private burial is planned due to COVID-19 restrictions, with a public memorial after restrictions are lifted. In lieu of flowers, donations to the Alzheimer's Association are encouraged. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Lionel Otho Crisp. Lionel Otho Crisp, born December 13, 1935, on a ranch in southern Menard County, passed away at home on Sunday morning in Lorain, Texas, surrounded by family. He is preceded in death by his parents, Mr. Otho Crisp and Mrs. Elizabeth Crisp, his wife of 62 years, Mrs. Earlene Crisp. He is survived by their two children, Mrs. Kathleen Crone and husband Doug of Big Spring, Texas, Mr. Neil Crisp and wife Amber of Cisco, Texas. There are 13 grandchildren, 33 great-grandchildren, and one expecting, along with 12 great-great-grandchildren. A special thanks to Miss Laura Conaway, Miss Katie Strickland, Miss Brooke Bays, and Miss Vicky Jones. Due to coronavirus and social distancing guidelines of event limits of 10 people, the graveside services will be streamed for family and friends. Services are under the direction of Schaffer Funeral Home, Sherwood Way. Wilbert Leo Pat Grigg. Wilbert Leo Pat Grigg, 80, passed away peacefully at his home on April 19, 2020. Private services for the family will be at 2 p.m. Wednesday, April 22, 2020, at the Nellie Picklin Welch Rosewood Chapel. Interment will follow at Trinity Memorial Park. He was born on August 25, 1939, to Rosamund and C.C. Gregg. He attended school in Ackerley and graduated from Ackerley High School in 1957. He is survived by his son, Robin Gregg Harris of San Diego, California, his son, Jason Dennis Gregg of Big Spring, his daughter, Laura, and her husband, James Dumas of Midland, his beloved granddaughters, Hannah Dumas of Denton, Texas, and Leah Dumas of Midland, along with his brothers, Dub Gregg and wife, Kay of Big Spring, Buster and his wife, Judy of Corrigan, Texas, sister-in-law, Nelda Gregg of Bedford, Texas, and his faithful dog, Tilly. Pat was preceded in death by his parents, his wife Patsy, his brother Bill and wife Joyce Grigg, and his brother Pete Grigg. Pat loved people, and to know him was to love him. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Jose Angel Villa Jr. Jose Angel Villa Jr., 64, 31 of Midland, Texas, passed away on Sunday, April 19, 2020. Due to restriction pertaining to COVID-19 rules, there will be limited visitation at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home on Tuesday, April 21, 2020. A private graveside service will be Wednesday, April 22nd at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his wife, Ana Patricia Esquivel, his four kids, Aileya Nicole Villa, Raimundo Munoz, Hinyaka Ramirez, and Meli Ramirez, his mother, Maria Dolores Lozano, his father, Jose Angel Villa, his stepmother, Olga Trejo, and his grandmother, Adelida Lozano.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, April 22nd. Jesus House, Serving a Need. The story was written by Michael Bauer. The impact from COVID-19 has led to many economic hardships for people everywhere. Fortunately, Jesus House of Odessa has managed to increase the number of meals to serve for the less fortunate on a daily basis. Jesus House, located on 6th Street, is a nonprofit ministry of Faith Temple Fellowship Church, providing food and clothing to those in need, in addition to a night shelter for men. Before the pandemic, Program Director Elisha Ramirez said Jesus House would serve around 50 to 70 people, but that number has increased close to 150 daily. The place serves breakfast from 6 a.m. to 6:30 a.m., in addition to lunch from 11 a.m. to noon on Monday through Friday. Quote, "We've always been serving breakfast and lunches," Ramirez said. "We've been doing this for about 10 years now as a soup kitchen. But now, during the virus, we've been actually serving even more. Usually, we serve around 50 to 75 people, but ever since the virus, we've been hitting upwards of 150 daily for lunch," end quote. Ramirez says part of the reason why they've been able to provide an increased number of meals is due to the volunteers as well as donations from the community. Quote, "We've had plenty of volunteers come in," Ramirez said. "The community has been helping us out by either funding the kitchen or they bring food. The food on Monday was provided by another church." End quote. In addition to churches, other business and groups step in to help provide meals. Quote, "We have an oil field company who caters every Tuesday for us," Ramirez said. "We have a group of ladies that are coming in on Thursday to cook spaghetti. They come once a month and cook spaghetti for us. We have another meal that is being provided by the Odessa Chamber of Commerce on Friday." For Ramirez, it's been a blessing to be able to help others, especially families with children. Quote, "We have noticed, especially now with the virus hitting, that we're serving more children," she said. "Being able to help them and give them something that they may be lacking at home has really been our goal. Our mission is a needs ministry, and when there's a need, we'd like to fill it. They're coming for lunches because maybe they didn't make it to ECISD in time for something, so being able to help build that need for them is what we're here for. We've made friends with everybody. We just try to do our best." End quote. According to Ramirez, the number of plates Jesus House serves typically fluctuates on a daily basis, but that it's typically between 140 and 150. Quote, "Right before the virus hit and the oil fields started going down, our numbers actually dropped from 75 to maybe 50 people," Ramirez said. "We thought that was strange because even in the winter time we serve over 50 people. Then it started going from 50 to 75 to 100 and then 130 and then 150. It's just gradually gone up, either from word of mouth or advertising on Facebook, so that could be a lot of it." End quote. Among the key items for donations for the soup kitchen includes beef, chicken, hamburger meat, and lunch meat. Quote, "We take any type of meat, hamburger, chicken, pork chops, whatever, we'll take it," Ramirez said. "We don't turn it away. We accept all sorts of canned goods. You can find our list on JesusHouseOdessa.com, and it will list our food items that use on a daily basis." End quote. While Jesus House hasn't been able to serve people inside due to COVID-19 restrictions, they've still managed to provide meals in to-go boxes just outside the building. Quote, "We're used to them coming inside and sitting down for the hour and chatting," Haley Hoffity, who also works with Jesus House. Quote, "They're all friends, so they'll talk to each other at lunch, but right now, we're having to do it where you come up, take your food, and leave, since we can't have them hanging out on property anymore, at least until the whole COVID-19 is over. So it's been hard seeing them leave because we're used to talking to them and hanging out with them. But they're still getting fed this way." End quote. Some of the meals have been delivered. Currently, about 5 volunteers help deliver meals for Jesus House, but the Reverend Donnie Kiker of Faith Temple Fellowship says that they are looking for more drivers. Quote, "We can use about 5 more, and the reason is because we want to expand to West Odessa, and so once we get 5 more that can do it faithfully, we'll expand out to the west side," Kiker said. He said those that are interested in delivering are encouraged to call the church and go through the process. Quote, "We want to make sure that they've been healthy before we let them come up here," Kiker said. Even those that can't come up here and help, they can donate either funds or hamburgers and chicken. We'll always need hamburger meat and chicken. End quote. With the community stepping up to donate, Ramirez says it's been a godsend to be able to continue helping those in need during times of crisis. Quote, "We have not had an extreme need in food because the community has really stepped up," Ramirez said. "They're helping fund it or bringing us food, and if it wasn't for the community, we probably would be struggling in some areas, trying to keep up, but through the generous hearts of the community, we've been able to not have any big needs on food. One day, we were asking for spaghetti noodles, and not even 10 minutes later, a phone call came through asking us about donated noodles. The Lord helps provide for us." End quote. Doctors cautious about reopening. The story was written by Michael Merlo. While Odessa Mayor David Turner is eager to reopen the economy, local doctors say they would like to see a more substantial and consistent downtrend in Hector County numbers before considering it. Turner said during a phone interview Tuesday that, quote, "People are out of work. Some are eligible for unemployment, some are not, and we got to get people started back to work," end quote. Turner added that he is working on a proposal with six other West Texas mayors to send a plan to Governor Greg Abbott to start opening up the economy and address the area's more specific needs. Quote, "I think the trend has a lot to do with it. The doctors' opinions will have lots to do with it. We're going to have this virus going forward until we get either a vaccine or a cure," he said. "We're going to have a certain amount of this around, and we got to get people back to work, but you also got to do what you can to protect them," end quote. Turner said that the city is working on putting together a declaration to recommend wearing a mask when going out, as well as putting together policies for cleanliness for when the economy does open back up. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin reported that MCH has tested 572 people, 37 positive, 4 in the hospital, 447 negative, 88 pending, and 9 persons under investigation. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that out of the 169 Madison Medical Resort employees tested, 155 have come back negative, and 14 are pending. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown said ORMC has conducted 247 tests, 13 positives, 193 negatives, and 41 pending. ORMC has tested 98 Madison Medical Resort residents, and 59 have been negative, while 39 are pending, she said. Quote, "We currently do not have any patients in-house with COVID-19. We won't have any more that are under investigation now that we have the rapid testing, provided that we do continue to get the testing kits." ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan said that it's very clear that while there are less new cases every day, quote, "it's not downtrending yet, so the number of cases is still higher today than it was yesterday, so we want that number to go downwards for us to say we are in the downtrend of the curve," end quote. Saravanan said that ORMC is, quote, "starting to realize that our surge may not be as big as we had planned for," end quote. Sarah Vannon said that ORMC will open up for elective cases starting Wednesday and said that they would send a letter to the health department saying that they won't request any more PPE from public sources. Quote, "That's a bold and hard statement to make because we know what we have right now, but if we hit the peak that we had thought about before, we'll run out in several weeks, and if we can't request any more, unless the vendors are able to keep up with the supply chain, we won't get any more," end quote. Tippin said that MCH is not ready to sign a letter saying that they wouldn't request PPE from public sources. Tippin said, although they want to do elective surgeries, he doesn't want to risk sending the letter. The Ector County Public Information Officer, Eddie Shelton, reported that the Ector County Health Department has 61 positives, 937 negatives, 180 pending lab results, and tested 1,178 in total. He added that 28 have recovered, and there have been 4 deaths. There have been 5 deaths in Ector County hospitals, but one of those 5 was not a resident of Ector County. The ECHD only records cases who are residents of Ector County. Shelton said that 34% of cases are males, 66% are females, 74% are Hispanic, and 26% non-Hispanic. When asked about updates of the Emergency Operations Center exposure, Shelton said that 2 health department employees had tested positive from the EOC. One tested positive on April 14th and the other on April 16th. He said that all the other EOC members have been tested and those results came back negative. For the person who was tested in connection with Lincoln Tower Retirement Home in Odessa, Shelton said that that person was tested and their results came back negative. Also, Ector County Hospital District Police are expected to make an arrest in connection with a woman falsely claiming she was COVID-19 positive when she was not. Pfluger poised for Congress. GOP nominee sketches grassroots action. The story was written by Bob Campbell. Compared to serving in Congress next year, flying combat missions over the Mideast may seem relatively benign to August Pfluger II, a recently retired Air Force fighter pilot of whom most people in the Permian Basin hadn't heard of until he filed last fall to succeed the retiring Representative Mike Conaway. Pfluger made a name for himself by strafing the crowded Republican primary field and zooming away with the nomination that's tantamount to election. Now he is poised to meet Democrat John Mark Hogg and Libertarian Wasey Alpha Cody, both of San Angelo, in the November 3rd general election to see who represents the giant 29-county west-east running 11th congressional district. But with 108,000 Republicans having voted in the primary to only 16,000 Democrats, there seems no doubt who will enter Washington's cauldron of rancorous partisanship and gotcha tactics next January 3rd. Buoyed by TV ads showing him ready to take off in his $150 million F-22, Pfluger won every county, including Midland, where native Midlander Brandon Batch gave him his closest shave with 5,318 votes to 8,500. The 42-year-old product of a family with ranches in Kimball, Concho, and Edwards counties was inspired to fly by his late maternal granddad, John Koschak of San Angelo, who flew for the Army Air Corps during World War II, and he says his family's heritage, dating to the founder of Pflugerville, northeast of Austin, great-great-great-grandfather Henry Pfluger Sr., who lived from 1803 to 1867, further impelled him to serve his nation and state. He has an uncle, Carl Koschak of Dallas, a retired American Airlines pilot who was a Navy pilot and captain. His great-granddad, Walter Pfluger Sr., was an Army Lieutenant Colonel during World War I. His parents are Walter and Cheryl. Pfluger is a German name meaning plowman. He was nominated to the U.S. Air Force Academy by former Congressman Lamar Smith of San Antonio after graduating from San Angelo Central High School, where he played football and baseball, and he recalls his years at the academy north of Colorado Springs as, quote, extremely strenuous. Quote, taking 18 to 23 hours per semester, every waking hour between 6 a.m. and 11 p.m. was filled with some sort of activity from academics to sports, he said. It definitely taught you to prioritize and manage your time, end quote. He also has a master's degree from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida, Air University at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama, and Georgetown University in Washington. Commissioned with honors in 2000, Pfluger trained at Laughlin Air Force Base near Del Rio, flew F-15s, and was one of the first 100 pilots assigned to the Lockheed Martin F-22 Raptor, which he calls, quote, the most advanced airplane in the world, in the 380th Air Expeditionary Wing. That's not to say the sleek jet was problem-free, because Pfluger at times had to call on everything he knew, particularly on an occasion he declined to go into detail about, to avoid going down in Iraq or Syria in 2016-2017 and facing capture by ISIS. Quote, a Jordanian pilot was shot down and tortured horrifically, he said. Something could go wrong at any moment, and you relied on your training and emergency procedures to deal with the aircraft, always keeping an awareness of where you were. Your life was always in danger. 12 of my friends died in training and combat crashes, end quote. Now a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force Reserve, Pfluger misses the camaraderie with fellow pilots and ground support crews, musing, quote, you're talking about one of the greatest teams on the planet, a phenomenal team, end quote. Having spent over $1.1 million for the nomination, he's sending COVID-19 supplies around the district and talking to constituents, including representatives of the basin's energy industry. Quote, the Saudis have dumped oil onto the market in an irresponsible way, he said. Our independent producers are the true patriots of the industry because they're out there accepting more risk and providing the country with a huge layer of national security, end quote. Asked if President Trump had backed off his initial reaction that the drop in gasoline prices was good, Pfluger said he had joined energy reps in urging the president to be more militant about the caprices of 34-year-old Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Quote, especially coming from somebody who is supposed to be our partner and ally, Saudi Arabia's anti-free market action is hurting this industry, and we're pushing them hard to rectify the situation, the nominee said. There is no country whose help we've needed more for national security and to deter communism and ISIS. The President and Energy Department are on board to pressure Saudi Arabia and the rest of OPEC not to dump millions of barrels of oil onto the market when it's not needed. What bin Salman has done is aimed at Russia, but he's directly hurting the United States and Permian Basin because the price levels we have right now are not sustainable, end quote. Pfluger said 90% of his contributions are from Texas and most from within the 11th District. He said the state is in tough economic times and he didn't know how much more he will be able to raise. Quote, right now I'm focused on helping people with this health crisis, he said. We have links to all 29 counties and we're seeing what they need and how we can be helpful, end quote. Pfluger and his wife Camille, who have three daughters, met Conaway and his wife Suzanne at the annual Heritage of Odessa Foundation Community Statesman Awards dinner on February 20th at the MCM Grande Hotel and Fun Dome. Asked what they talked about, he said, quote, "Congressman Conaway said it is an incredible district and this is the best job he's ever had. He said I had every reason to believe I was in for an incredible journey," end quote. Independent oil producer Randy Gardner of San Angelo, who also works in Midland, has known Pfluger since he was 4 or 5 years old, he said. Quote, "His family moved here from Eden," Gardner said, referring to a small town 46 miles east-southeast of San Angelo. Quote, "The most interesting thing about August is the humility he has to go with that stellar resume. He is one of the kindest, most concerned men about people that I know. He's very principled. He has a good heart and a drive to do good things. He does good work, but with an attitude of concern for others. I'm sure he has weak points. I've just never seen them," end quote. Addressing a criticism Pfluger has faced, Gardner said that the nominee, quote, "has been serving this district his whole life while spending 20 years in the Air Force, flying 1,700 hours in the Pacific and European commands, and 300 in the Mideast, and serving as a National Security Council advisor in Washington last summer and early fall. Quote, August hasn't always been here, but he has been off working for us," Gardner said. "It's admirable to see what he has accomplished at this relatively young age," end quote. Pfluger's leadership models are President Trump, U.S. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, U.S. Representative Dan Crenshaw of Houston, a retired Navy SEAL, the late former President Ronald Reagan, and former U.S. Secretary of Defense James Mattis, a retired Marine Corps general. Quote, "I'm watching what President Trump is doing for the country and trying to learn from his philosophy of cutting through bureaucratic tape," he said. "Most Americans don't want or need an overregulated society. 8 years of the Obama administration put us on a tough road. We need to get folks back in the business of doing what we do best, innovating, making a profit, and serving the specific needs of our communities," Pfluger said. Tom Cotton and Dan Crenshaw have these attributes. "I try to understand how President Reagan led and what he did to change the world, fighting communism." General Mattis conveyed complete trust in all his subordinates and communicated a strong, shared vision of the mission of command. "Good leadership is in your heart, and it has to be on the basis of being a servant. The essence of leadership is to put others first," end quote.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.